Vardian, get in. Close the door.
Sure. Hey, Dylan. You've been busy up here.
Yeah, this is what work looks like. I've been trying to figure out a solution on the monster ecology problem. I need a couple of sigils in the right spots.
Dylan, are you sure about this?
I wasn't entirely convinced magic existed until last week, Aram. I'm not certain about anything.
I assume this is one of those things you weren't quite sure about?
I mean, I could probably get better materials for this if we had more funding.
Well, for $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they are released. For $5, you'll get those ad-free episodes early, along with audio DM notes featuring Dylan and I recapping what went into producing each one.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DM's notes, along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels also get a personalized shout-out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we've got left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 Patreon tiers are available with 7-day trials for new subscribers, so head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want a free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster.
My name is Aram, and my pronouns are he, him. I'm the writer and producer of the Dungeons & Dragons podcast, God's Fall.
And my name's Dylan. My pronouns are he, they, and I'm a physicist from Canada.
Welcome to Kill Every Monster. This week on Kill Every Monster, we are featuring The Beholder.
The Monster Manual claims that one glance at a beholder is enough to assess its foul and otherworldly nature. Aggressive, hateful, and greedy, these aberrations dismiss all other creatures as lesser beings, toying with them or destroying them as they choose. A beholder's spheroid body levitates at all times, and its great bulging eye sits above a wide, toothy maw, while its smaller eye stalks that crown its body twist and turn to keep its foes in sight.
That is more of a poem than a description.
It's a bad sentence. That last bit was one sentence.
That's a lot, but you do get the idea. We know what it looks like.
Yeah.
We are joined by Zach. If you've ever found a surprise $5 in your pocket, Zach Speaks Giant put it there. You're welcome. On his YouTube channel, you can find D&D But Real, a one-shot replacing every role with a physical or mental challenge. It's like D&D meets Taskmaster meets Saw. Welcome to the show, Zach.
I am so excited. I am burgeoning with aberrant knowledge.
You picked a big monster.
I did. I took a swing, didn't I?
See, this is one of the things. Nobody wants to pick the big monster. Everybody thinks they're not big enough for the big monster, which means we hit a certain point where we're like, somebody fucking take it.
See, my opinion is if I fail big, it's funny.
And honestly, you picked the goofiest big thing to fail on.
I did, right?
Honestly, these are a goofy prick.
We're going to make it an entertaining product either way, right? Either I nail it, great. I don't, badly. Yeah.
Which leads us into the first question. Zach, what is a beholder?
They are wacky. They're wacky dudes. They're a ball of eyes. They got one big eye. They got lots of little eyes. They are xenophobic, even to their own kind, which is interesting. They have like...
Which technically not xenophobic at that point, just phobic in general.
Right, I guess just bigoted. Just big old bigots for every possible thing. They are such a weird creature because they are one of the original D&D monsters, right? They are, you know, Gygax created it. It's one of the monsters that Wizards of the Coast actually have like a trademark on because it is the original property. And because of that, they've gone through generations as you know, each edition has come out of changing in weird ways. And we have the fifth edition creature, but we also have all these like weird little backstory bits that are no longer canon, but still very weird. Like, did you know, I found this out for this, that beholders used to create more beholders because they had a womb tongue, a tongue womb.
No.
That's awful.
Yeah.
How did the womb tongue work?
Don't ask
so,
that.
No, we need to know now. How did tongue work? Yeah, we do.
So it was like at the base of their tongue. At some point in their life, their tongue would swell.
Fuck, I hate this.
This is going to get real body horror, by the way. It would protrude out of their mouth, and then they'd bite off their own tongue.
Oh!
And the baby beholders would eat their way out of said tongue.
Beholders. Oh. So this is like...
Yes.
Oh, fuck.
So they would have a litter.
I hate that.
And then the mama beholder would pick the one that looked most like itself, and then either kill or abandon the others.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean...
It's not great.
It is, though. I mean,
it is great.
To a certain extent.
So now the way that they do is when a beholder dreams of itself or of another beholder, it will create that beholder. And that's kind of the lore they've settled on. But they... have this long history in D&D, and because of that, I think they have some weird, like, there's some very interesting elements to them, and they have some just, like, things that just, like, I don't think should be part of their oeuvre anymore.
Wizards has a bad habit of trying to fix bad fiction by not decanonizing it, but adding stuff on top of it until it makes sense.
I think the idea of comic book canon has been a brain destroying worm to how fiction works.
Yeah.
People assume that you have to have a narrative that is coherent with every other previous edition of that narrative, and it's impossible and makes bad stories.
Do you know how much detail there is just about Waterdeep?
Insane amounts.
Like, if you try to run a game and you're lazy and you're... I say lazy. I've done it 1,000 times. It's not particularly lazy, but you just go, I'm not writing a world. I'm just dropping us into Forgotten Realms. It's fine. And then somebody just goes, oh, well, let's go to the Dale Lands. And you're like, what the fuck are the Dale Lands? I only read the Sword Coast book. I don't know what that means.
That's the whole region where everyone's called Dale, right?
Yes. There's a great meme. It just says the Forgotten Realms, and there's a little circle around the Sword Coast, and it says the Remembered Realms, because that's the only thing we ever spend time in. That's the other comic book tie-in, is that nothing can really change in D&D.
Fundamentally, yeah.
Yeah, things can change for a while, but then they have to get reset,
yeah,
and then everything has to go back to normal. Waterdeep can never be destroyed.
Just have a campaign. How sick would it be if a pre-published campaign came out and they just destroyed Waterdeep? And they're like, yeah.
They murdered several gods once.
Yeah.
For as much as, you know, the fucking Time of Troubles had all of its own garbage, that was cool as an idea. Now they've brought all the gods back only to do nothing with that concept. It's silliness. Especially when, to bring us back on topic, you have a weird little ball of eyes sitting under your city that can dream things into existence for some reason.
Yeah.
And it's mad at you.
Beholders are the highest in their lair, are the highest CR aberration in the monster manual. They're tied with the Elder Brain. And I think that's important. They're the peak of whatever aberrations are. A thing happens in D&D where, like, you have a bunch of discordant things and people are like, well, those don't make sense together. And it's like, well, that's kind of your job as like the DM to kind of make that make sense and around, like create the lock for the key. And we have a really weird key with the beholder. And I think that's why a lot of people then swing around to making them goofy and wacky.
Yeah.
Because they're like, this is a whole bunch of weird shit. I don't have like a unified like idea of what they want or what they're even striving for. So they're just goofy guys. They got like straight, they got a silly voice and they gotta like, they do. And I think, and I do that all the time because it's fun. And I do a lot of comedy stuff. But if you want to run a aberrant creature, an eldritch creature, a top tier eldritch creature, you have to kind of put in some legwork to be like, okay, what is this thing? What does it want? Why is it here? What is it from? And you don't have to go all the way down the rabbit hole of figuring everything out, because I don't think that's good either. You want there to be like mysteries involved, but I think having some kind of, and even if this doesn't ever get to the players, having something in your mind of what it's doing and why it's doing it will help inform its decisions.
Any creature that malevolent, that intelligent, with that many resources, has a plan. It has some sort of eyeball rubbing together plan that it's been cooking up for decades.
So here's the thing. Something this, at the same time, solipsistic and yet so aware of everything outside itself that it's also not even genocidal, it's omnicidal. It is a fantastic, I don't have a plan, I'm going to break it, like nihilist villain.
Yeah.
Those could be, this is a goofy, silly beholder, and he's just breaking stuff, and he's going to shoot eye beams at stuff, and sometimes he comes out of the sewer, and he just... But also, this is one of the most powerful creatures out there. I don't love talking about things in terms of their challenge rating, because, like, it's functionally meaningless. Yeah. It has 19 hit dice. It is roughly equivalent to nearly a level 20 character on its own. And it has legendary action, so it's also popping off shit between your moves. How powerful is your entire guard force? This thing in a city, if for whatever reason it decides it's done with the city, is an apocalyptic event. It's very, very bad.
And also, if you're going to face this thing, you're not going to face it in the city. You're going to face it in its lair. And that makes it much more powerful.
And it has prepared for you. It is an incredibly intelligent creature. And all it does is be paranoid about creatures trying to break into it. It gets to a point where, what do you do as a DM? How cruel do you go? And DMs know, you can create a monster, you can create a situation that will kill your players. Like, you have infinite resources.
You can give it any trap, any magic item, anything it could have prepared with spells. You could literally allow it to do anything.
I feel like people use traps when, why would, like, a bandit leader put a spike trap in his hallway? Like, surely that's going to kill more of your own guys than anyone else, right? Like,
he may have, but it's been filled in since because he lost three guys. It just wasn't fucking worth it anymore.
Guys, hey, guys, this was a bad idea. I can't believe I did this. I'm sorry.
We're also going to have to fill in the pool because none of you ever learned how to swim. Like, the whole place is just a death trap.
I don't know how I was planning to feed all those piranhas. Like, what was my plan there?
Meanwhile, you've got two good explanations for a pit trap in a beholder lair, which is either your simple, like, it levitates, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Why would it have straight hallways that lead into rooms? The idea of sneaking in through a vent breaks in a beholder lair because it travels by vent primarily.
Right.
Yeah.
Everywhere it goes is a vent. Yeah.
Yeah.
It puts in a pit trap because the only people who are going to step on a pit trap are the people that have legs, and fuck them. All of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Which is the other justification. Like, even if they have a full-blown lair full of minions, I'll put a spike trap in the hallway because fuck you.
Yeah, if I lose some minions, it's... I don't give a shit.
No, that was the minion test.
Yeah.
That was the final test and you have failed.
If you know the trope blue-orange morality, we often see things as good or evil or, like, bad or selfish or not selfish. Blue-orange morality is about, like... this thing is unknowable and has unknowable goals. It doesn't mean it's evil necessarily, but it means it is striving or has values associated with things that we don't. It's not just a different culture. It is a different universe of seeing things, right? And because of that, that's a two-way street, right? And so when you're thinking of a beholder who is like preparing traps and counter plans to your party's plans, yes, they are very intelligent, but they are coming from an alien viewpoint. As it is to us, we are to them. So it doesn't, for instance, put a lot of thought behind how much a party will look out for each other.
It just assumes everyone thinks like it does.
It knows that we are social creatures, but it doesn't super know how to internalize that fact. It has studied humans in some way, in whatever ways it can, because it also like doesn't like them and or any sentient creature, you know, or thinks they're lesser than. And so underestimates certain abilities of our own.
You almost want to run a beholder like someone who has been playing Metal Gear Solid for too long. Back in the day with simplistic AI, you had a perfect model of how each character on the screen is going to interact.
Right.
The beholder doesn't understand what you're doing. It's building scripts in its head. It has an AI for how people behave. So it's going to have stupid fucking things like, oh, guards. Yeah, guards walk on a cycle. That one looks like a guard. So he'll probably turn around soon to go back and that'll be fine.
Yeah.
What does that one do? Well, that one's dressed like a cleric. Clerics heal things, so that one heals things. Okay, good, noted. No one else can heal things because that one's the healer one.
Yeah. Certainly there's a computational aspect to it, is of, you know, because that's how it definitely, that's a very good way to make something feel alien, just have them do the math on it and be removed. But also, I just think that they're so hateful of everything that they also have to be dismissive. You can't be hateful and go, well, it's better than me, right? You have to have like some feeling of superiority. And I just think they're so removed that they're like, well, of course they cluster together. Their weakness bonds them, like they have to, you know, because
yeah,
you see how you exist in the world, all the power you have and all this natural, and these are just ants. They're just tiny little things.
I don't think you're wrong, but I think those are like two equivalent ways of running it. Like neither of these is really the correct way to go about it. It's both of them are going to end in a place where you're playing something alien that fundamentally disagrees. Aram, your model there kind of assumes a base level of, to take Zach's sort of way of phrasing it, the standard black and white morality of like, it does understand. And it's like, oh, they're clumping together. Why? Because they're weak and it bonds them.
Well, that's judgmental, right? But it doesn't necessarily mean that he's like, I'm going to crush them. It could just be like, look, I know in 1,000 years, this event is going to happen. This door is going to open, or this creature is going to fall from the heavens, and it's going to destroy everything. And I am hell-bent on fixing that. You are too small to see that. Also, you'll be dead. I, however, we'll solve this and save the world, and I'm going to burrow through everything to get what I want. If it means tearing down your city and killing everyone you love, I'm absolutely going to do that to save the world. So they're a monster, but they're not a monster in a way.
Even that level of building in the insignificance of the world still functions on a completely understandable morality, just on a time scale or a significant scale that we can't work with.
Right, sure. So how do you make it feel more alien?
What are some goals that are on such a large scale that you could justify practically any behavior in order to reach that goal? Wouldn't it be interesting if they came, wherever they came from, was one of the, like, the outer realms that is the first realm to experience entropy, the heat death of the universe, and they are fleeing that into our own realms. So the other cool thing about beholders is that because they dream their own, another creation, almost always they fight for supremacy. They fight to the death after that point, which means that they are always, with every generation they improve, they have this like very violent, accelerated evolution process that happens every generation. what would cause that? And why does that, why would that be, why would that be how something would develop? And you know, whether that happened magically or not, they are self-improving to the point that they need to be to solve a big problem, to be the solution of something.
We've talked a lot about beholder motivations, and that leads us in real nice. Are beholders monsters?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think if there was a person that did horrible things for an unknowable reason, just because you don't know it, still doesn't mean it's not a horrible reason. Like, if you knew someone who is committing atrocities for what it considered a great reason, that person is still a monster. So I think while this is a, you know, either like a, you know, a corrupted T-cell of a dead god, or it is, you know, a plague to undo, you know, entropy, it is still a monstrous thing to us. It is still in our best interest for it to go away, please.
Even within all the plans or whatever it's doing, or whatever its long-term goals, you always feel like it would also be a dick.
Yeah.
And your death is at any moment guaranteed.
It would be fun for it. It would be a fun, distracting little thing.
Yeah.
It would, oh, what a lovely evening. And then it would go back to its master plan.
There is no society in which you could build that would safely and comfortably house a beholder's ideas and ideals.
For there to be more beholders than you started with, you have to have a beholder accidentally generate its own progeny outside of a range where it can kill it fast enough. That's immediately your pretty good sign that maybe this is an unsustainable, terrifying beast. Yeah.
The only way I could see it happening is if there were enough aberrations where they were born, realized what happened, and instead of the instinct to fight, they fled. And if there were enough of those aberrations that found each other, a very small society, a village perhaps, a hidden council of beholders, maybe of like three or four of them.
So there is what, again, these like fractal, like, you know, offshoots of beholder lore. There is the hive beholder, which, you know, dreams of a fractal, like, mirroring of itself, and essentially creates a bunch of weaker versions, but identical versions of its own self. And they live in this hive mind kind of situation.
Identical, but weaker.
Yeah, you gotta be able to crush it.
Yeah, interesting, right? There is a beholder. Isn't Xanathar, like Xanathar?
Yep, Xanathar is just a beholder who runs the mafia.
Yeah, did he? Is that the one where like he drew the card from the deck of many things that flipped his morality? I've seen that as a thing.
Oh, I like that though. I don't know, but I like that.
It's an interesting take. That's somewhere. That's some like prominent beholder.
I also really do like beholders. You know, again, outside of just being a big, huge threat.
Yeah.
I like the idea of you having to deal with it and engage with it, and the idea of like a quote unquote good beholder, maybe not good, but like not outwardly killy beholder is cool. That's fun.
Yeah, yeah. Something that has need of the party and like is always an interesting thing, and coming up with reasons why that could happen.
Then the last thing. Zach, how would you change the Beholder in 5th edition?
I think Beholder suffers from this thing of, like, they were one of the original. They have, like, this, the idea of, like, they're the D&D monster. They've been around forever. And they've just become more and more deadly and less interesting over time, mechanically. Mm-hmm. They have the eye lasers, but every eye laser does pretty much the same fucking thing. Like,
let me take a look at this.
Most of them usually straight up kill you. Like, there's the death laser, there's the petrification one, petrify.
The disintegrating laser.
Paralyze, disintegrate, death, and petrification. Oh, and sleep, which, if you're talking just in terms of combat, functionally, that's half the lasers are you're out of the game now. There's the charm ray, slowing ray, fear ray. which, to be fair, interesting effects to hit the party with.
That's interesting, yeah.
And then there's the telekinetic ray.
Which I also like.
Functionally, if you were to roll it on the D10, 1 in 10, you just push someone. 40% chance that you hit them with a status effect. And a 50% chance that you try to murder them outright.
I don't think that's very interesting.
No, I would tend to agree.
The fact that every beholder is described as being so different from every other beholder, and yet mechanically...
they're all the same.
They're all the same. They are aberrant. They are strange. Why isn't any of the effects they do strange? If they are evolving every time, if one beats the other, why did it do it? And so I created a list. I created a list of, like, different mechanical effects, and then I created some really weird ones that we'll get to at the end. Gravity shift is a dunk. And it doesn't have to be gravity, like, reverse, like the spell, which, like, flings someone up. Think of, like, the most interesting direction a player could go and fling them that way. Using the geese spell is really interesting.
I love the idea, like, in combat, it works as charm. But out of combat, given time and focus with the eye, it can be this greater ability to geese them.
Or make it, like, in combat, make it a suggestion effect where it's, like, forbid them from doing certain tasks or actions.
Yeah.
I like that, like, giving them constraints around what they can do.
I'm personally a fan of either leaving or removing the charm ray entirely and just giving them spellcasting, because, again... once you hit a certain level of magical bullshit, especially for something that is isolationist, like, I cannot imagine a beholder that doesn't read.
Yeah.
So what you wind up with is just, why wouldn't it be able to cast spells? And the only reason is its anti-magic eyeball in the center. And all you do is you make it one of those things like, it can close its eye and then do magic.
It can't read scrolls.
It can. It's got a shitload of eyes.
Right. It's got a bunch of other eyes, right?
It's got, at minimum, 11 eyes per the monster manual.
Right.
The big one, and then 10 that do rays.
It would be nice to give it spells and, like, let it use magic items, because of course it would. And also, as a beholder, if your abilities, the majority of your abilities, are random, it means you can't rely on them at any given time, and you need something you can rely on. You need something you can do all the time. If one out of 10 times, you know, it's just going to make people fall asleep when you meant to disintegrate someone, you're like, well, that's not very impressive. Like, you know, you want shit to happen when you expect it to happen. It would be very strange to have all your abilities be random.
Yeah.
We sort of had this conversation on the Blink Dog episode, but I think this is an issue of interpretation. I do not personally believe that in combat, a beholder's rays are actually completely stochastic. I think it's a fucking disco ball.
Yeah, I think it's firing all of its lasers at once.
Shooting all of them all the time.
It's just spinning around.
All these tentacles are waving constantly and shooting at random fucking intervals. And it's which one was pointed at you today. If you have something that truly believes it should be left to its own devices, giving it the tendency to fully lose itself, you come after it, its process has been interrupted, and it goes from this fairly brilliant, scheming, if incomprehensible, creature to just a roving disco ball of doom.
And then you get, like, modify memory. That's a fun one to hit a player with in the middle of a combat. Have them completely forget where they are, why they were here. Make it really powerful. Take away something from their backstory. Think of them as like a mad scientist, where they are very, very curious and completely devoid of morality.
Yeah.
They would be curious about our memories. And so you can imagine a beholder just like rifling through your mind and picking out bits it likes and keeping them.
You could totally memento a party member where like they finally get to the lair of the beholder and the beholder turns and like, oh, again, this is the fourth time we've done this.
It's an aberrant creature. Why doesn't it reach past the game have a body swapping ability where the players have to swap character sheets.
That's just fun.
That's fun, right? And they don't all have to be deadly. I think that's the thing of, like, they've been pushed to be, like, as deadly as possible. And you can make ones that don't necessarily have an outright negative effect, but have a unhinged effect on your players, you know?
If they're going to be random, I really do like the idea of there being more effects than eyes. Like, I like the idea of, like, Wand of Wondering this a bit.
Yeah.
Where, like, maybe one round it shoots butterflies out of an eyeball, and that's just what happens.
Yeah.
They could be a little chaotic and random.
Making your beholders wild magic beholders just to cause problems.
Yes.
Yeah. I think they'll remember this fight. Even if it doesn't challenge them, like, fatally, I think they're going to remember this fight much more this way.
Aram, what's going on? Why is all of our stuff in boxes?
Good news, Dylan! Dead Ghost Productions is moving.
What do you mean, moving?
We're separating our patrons and launching a new Dead Ghost page to provide our listeners with more content and a clean RSS feed for all their podcasts. Stacy is helping us out with the heavy stuff.
She's a bit clumsy.
Okay. So that makes sense, sort of. What about the people who have already subscribed?
I've got it handled. Everyone who is currently subscribed to our Dead Ghost Productions level or our combined feeds level will get a free month once we split the feeds on June 1st. If you're signed up for a yearly subscription, you'll get just as many free months on our new Dead Ghost feed as you currently have left on that subscription.
Okay, so what do people have to do in order to make the switch?
It's easy. Everyone will get a link to activate their free subscription sent directly to their email. They just need to follow that link to the new Dead Ghost patron and they'll be all set. The changes won't start until June 1st, and if anyone has questions about it, they can email us at killeverymonster@gmail.com or deadghostproductions@gmail.com. They can also message us directly in Patreon.
Okay. This better not interfere with my experiments, Vardian.
Don't worry, Dylan. I've told Stacy to stay clear of your laboratory. How do we safely power down the nuclear generator again?
Aram, what was that?
Good news. I found a dragon.
No, you didn't. Dragons aren't real, Aram.
Oh, they are quite real, Dylan. And very clumsy.
All right, I'll play. Why did you bring a dragon here?
What better way to promote Kill Every Monster than with an actual dragon? We may need to pump up the Patreon just a little.
For $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they're released. For $5, you'll get them early along with audio DMs notes featuring Aram and I discussing how we made each episode.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DMs notes along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels get a personalized shout-out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we have left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 patron tiers are available with a 7-day free trial for new subscribers. So head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want another free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster.
Aram, tell me your character's name.
My character's name is Fogard, the Forgotten.
Sure. So, Fogard, this city has been everything to you. And there's a certain degree where that importance is almost ingrained by contrast. You remember your dad telling you about home, where you're from, and how you had to leave. The mines dug too deep, the time that the Beholder got out. And since then, you haven't gone back to the mines.
The story was exhausting. I mean, he would, like, march me up this tower. It always had to be a tower. We also had to be somewhere high because we're people from the mountains. And when we tell our stories, we have to tell them from the mountains. So we'd be, like, in a guard tower that was the same story every time. And I just didn't care. I didn't want to go home. Why would I leave the city? Everything I want is here.
Which makes today a little interesting. Because you walk out the door in a little bit of a fog, and the moment your eyes focus, you realize you don't know where the fuck this is.
Strange in a city I've lived all my life?
Yes.
Considering I'm about 200 years old?
Yeah, but you have been everywhere.
I've crawled through every catacomb. I've dug up every hidden passage. I know this city.
Not here. Zach, tell me what this back alley looks like.
It is every dark place that you shouldn't go in a city. It is somehow darker than the streets around it. Like, you can see daylight outside, but in this alley, it almost feels like night. The cobblestones are kind of, like, dripping wet. It is bedecked with deep wells of shadow where you kind of see things moving. They don't look necessarily person-shaped. They're hidden away. And it just makes you feel that hair standing up on the back of your neck. This isn't a fear of something in front of you. This is reptilian. This is primal.
I'm very glad that despite the fact that I'm just on my normal day, I decided to wear my armor, carry my weapons. Boy, that was lucky.
This is a thought that actually hits the back of your brain just quiet enough to not break the surface of the fear. But there's that fleeting thought of, why do I have my weapons and my armor? That's not a day-to-day thing. You're just trying to build context. The only time you walk out of a back door into an alleyway is, like, leaving a tavern. If there's, like, a big throng, then, like, you know everybody in town. You can go over and just go, like, hey, I'm gonna just leave through the kitchen. And they make way for you. It's fine. And you walk out in the back alley. Why the fuck would you have been at a bar in armor?
Something isn't right.
And this is where I'm going to make you make the first Arcana check.
Thinking something wasn't right, I was going to channel divinity, place my hand to my chest, and dismiss any magical effect that I might not be aware of that is currently on me.
Tell me how that ability works mechanically.
Cleansing Touch. You can use your action to end one spell on yourself or on one willing creature that you touch. 3 times per long rest.
You feel the pulse of warmth, but it's distant and it doesn't bump into anything. You've used it before. It almost feels like pushing something out of your body. Doesn't. There's nothing to push. And also it feels further away.
All right. Well, I will make that Arcana roll now. That is a natural 20. So I would like to know things, please.
Of course it is. For the record, I was going to set this at a higher... I was going to set this at a high DC.
No
ratchet
need.
It down. Okay, cool.
Yep, crushed it right off the bat.
It's all right, because we're also in space where you don't have context yet. You look around, and whatever this is clearly not perfectly real. You are somewhere else. This is constructed. But at the moment, you have very little context for what that means. There's that moment where you're looking and you're feeling. There's that little bit of divine spark of magic where you can reach out to the weave and feel it. And you're like, this is not conjured per se. But at the same time, like, there is nothing grounding it. It can't be real. And you're searching through your memories and you're like, no, I didn't come here. I wasn't wearing my armor when I woke up today. And also, I don't really remember waking up here or how I got here. You're just here now.
This incredible insight into the world around you does break it somewhat. You see at the one end of the alley, furthest away from the light, like cracks start to form and like black, like ocean water start to kind of like seep in.
I will head that way and I will cast Detect Evil and start sweeping to try and find the source of whatever's going on.
Give me a constitution save.
Okay.
You're a dwarf paladin. If you don't nail this, you're a fucking loser.
That is going to be a 9 plus 6 is 15.
You reel for a half beat and immediately end concentration, everything.
Everything's evil.
Absolutely everything. The cobblestones, that water, the walls, the door you walked through, you look down for a second, you, your armor, everything in here radiates evil. I'm going to say for the benefit of the listener, this isn't me saying that you yourself are actually evil or anything about your character.
Okay.
This is something you recognize from roll-on effects from that nat 20. Shit's fucked.
It's not great.
It's not good.
The axe comes down off the back into his hands, fingers gripping a little tight, but I'm heading towards the cracks, and that's the only thing that like seems different now.
It's just this like black water that's kind of like lapping out. It is lightless. It fills you with that same primal fear of like dread, and it seems like it is like lightless and just voidless, and it is a byproduct of your Arcana check. It is you seeing slightly behind something.
Are there people in the city or am I alone?
So what I want you to do.
Yes.
You're going to try to make me a check to basically do the magic eye thing.
Okay.
Because what you've done is you've seen past reality.
Okay.
And now you need to find a way to get your eyes to stop seeing the truth.
Yeah.
You need to see the lie that you are being told.
Oh, I dig that. I dig that so much.
I think this might be a straight wisdom.
Well, I rolled an 18 plus 2 is the other type of 20.
You push back, and the moment you do that, you actually see the water start to recede. The cracks start to close, and you're not 100% sure at this point if that is the cracks closing or are you forcing the idea that the cracks exist out of your brain well enough that it reality seems to be agreeing with you. It's indistinct, the difference, honestly. But the end of the alleyway just comes back into focus, and you can see out past the end, and you can see in this hazy sort of light, because again, you are fairly deep in the alley, shapes of a few people wandering around. You see town square, effectively.
They can see a path out of the alley is what you're saying.
It is an alley. There are two paths out of the alley. They're the same path. It's just, do you go to the north end of the block or the south end of the block? That's how alleys work around.
Yes, I got you. But initially there wasn't, he couldn't see.
Yeah, there
I
was
thought.
Some fuckery.
Yeah. All right. So I think his first instinct would be, of course, to leave the alley because it's scary. But
yes,
my boy is a paladin. And my boy, when he finds something scary that could be a threat to others, he deals with that threat. He does not run. So I think he would look towards the end of the alley, steady himself, plant the axe, grip the handle, and say a prayer to the only proper dwarven god, Clangadin Silverbeard. And he will say his prayer to Big Clang, and then he will find the creature that has done this, or entity, or whatever that has done this thing.
So tell me what you're actually doing so I can respond to you as a DM.
I'm just praying. I don't know. There's no mechanics for prayer. He's saying a prayer.
All right.
You're rubbing some flavor on it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Give me a religion check. Fuck.
All right. My religion is plus zero.
Listen, sometimes you know about your God and you have all the prayers memorized, and sometimes you feel
a natural. That is a natural one.
Okay.
Your God isn't named that.
Yeah, right. Oh, no. Clang a darn silver. I always get that wrong.
Roll me a dex save.
That is plus 3, and that is going to be a 12 plus 3 is 15.
So you're going to take half damage. Okay. Zach, you want to roll me like 3d6?
That's a 13.
So you're going to take 6 points of damage.
Okay.
You feel the warmth you should have felt on a delay. You pray hard, and you find that connection to your God, and you yank on it. And you watch the walls beside you shatter as that breaks through. And that water, instead of trickling out, slams into you from either side. This is a river being formed down the alley.
Okay.
So this is something that, with concentrated effort, you are maintaining your position. Like, this is a bear down your feet. Yeah. Plant your axe in the fucking stonework. Try not to move.
I just happen to be looking at my dwarven plate. If an effect moves you against your will along the ground, you can use your reaction to reduce the distance you are moved by up to 10 feet. So as he like is being sent down, he'll just activate his armor, his feet, you know, just kind of grip like magnets on the stone cobble, and he just drags along it, but he's able to like stand against the torrent.
Hell yeah.
I was going to make you keep rolling for this kind of shit, but you rolled a nat 20 off the bat, so I'm just going to tell you things. When you do that, the magic activates, and you feel the world compensate. And what this feels like is as if reality is in conversation with your expectations. You know what your armor does, so the armor does it. The world is accounting for what you know you can do.
Well, if that's true, and if the world will simply adapt to anything I do, then the only answer is to stop fighting it. So again, instead of struggling, he will calm himself, center himself, stay within himself, and he will stop fighting.
There was no water. The walls are fine. I don't know what you were talking about.
Okay. So it's back to now being an alley.
Yeah.
Right.
There's always an alley. Okay. What are you talking about?
But it's not an alley. Okay.
You sound crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Are you okay?
Yes, well, would a crazy man do this? And I will swing my dwarven axe of the north into the side of one of the buildings to see what happens.
Zach, we had a quick conversation about the structures within the city. Please, tell Aram what we decided.
As you slam your axe as hard as you can into the side of the wall, you see it buries deep.
Who am I?
And it is not the sound of stone, but flesh. Blood spurts from the wound that you have carved in the wall, pouring down the wall. As you pull that axe free,
Rom, wisdom save.
19 plus 10 is 29.
You hear the scream in the back of your head. It isn't a noise. It's in your head. It is also everywhere. But you manage to push back as just... You figured out the rules. You stop for a second and go, that can't be real. And so it isn't.
And so it's not, and because now I know that I have something to swing at, I am going to cast Staggering Smite at 4th level, charge up that axe and swing again.
Okay. Give me another save at disadvantage.
4 plus 10 is 14.
Zach, however many D4 you feel is necessary at this moment. I trust your judgment.
That is the lowest roll that I could possibly think of. That is 8 points of damage.
Okay. I mean, 5d4 could have been 5 would have been my choice for lowest, but hey, whatever.
Sure.
Aram, you're going to take 8 points of psychic damage as that scream rips through your head so loud that you can't pretend it isn't there.
Do I know the voice?
Make an intelligence check.
Well.
Investigation, if you have it.
Ooh, well, that's better. Unfortunately, a natural 1. 1 plus 5 is 6.
It's like, you know, when something is on the tip of your tongue. It's on, like, mm-hmm. It's right there.
The dream you start to forget the moment you wake up.
What does staggering smite do?
The next time you hit a creature with a melee weapon attack during the spell's duration, your weapon pierces both body and mind, and the attack deals an additional 4d6 psychic damage to the target. The target must make a wisdom saving throw. On a failed save, it is disadvantaged on attack rolls and ability checks and can't take reactions until the end of its next turn.
Aram, I need you to take your headphones off for a second.
Yeah.
We gotta have a chat.
Oh, okay. Just wave when you need me.
You want him to? You want to teleport him? Like glitches hat? Like he just is in another place now?
Honestly, I think this might work to our advantage because this is. I would have people storm the alley. Like you do the Inception thing, right? Like
yeah.
This is full on. He's attacking the brain.
Yeah.
And then it becomes one of the ways you can introduce your big speech of, my friends.
Yeah. Okay.
Feel like you can get a Looney Tunes fucking hero speech out?
Yeah.
Beauty. She's all yours then.
Let's do it.
Sorry, we just had to converse for a moment.
I think I'm doing well.
You're doing so good.
You're hitting all the buttons I didn't expect you to, but all the buttons that I feel like you should hit.
As you slam your axe into the wall again, you feel this like shudder through the world. You start to hear screams again. That scream in your mind, but then screams outside from people. And then you hear footsteps. A lot of them. A horde of them.
It sounds like people running barefoot on cobblestone. And the moment you look at the cobblestone and recognize that too is meat.
People pouring into the alley. They are sprinting towards you. More and more kind of pour in.
These people pouring in. I'm looking at them.
Yeah.
Do they seem to have their faculties? Are they I'm sure I've seen people be magically controlled or influenced. Do they appear to be things I can reason with?
You've got dark vision as a dwarf. As the first start to kind of get in within range of that dark vision, you see the people sprinting at you. You see perfectly constructed, masterfully crafted mannequins. Some made of wood. You can see the hinges articulated on every joint of their finger. Even panels of wood sliding over their face as they sneer. You see some made of stone. Their hefty weighted hinges sliding over each other. Plates in their body designed to move in a frighteningly realistic manner.
Oh. Well, fuck that. And he casts Dimension Door and goes up. So I'm in an alley, right?
Yep.
I want to be on top of the buildings away from the scary mannequin zombies, please. Thank you.
You teleport to the top of the building and you look out into a rolling street, a network of alleys, streets, intersecting into this little plaza in front of you. You can see the pedestal where a statue should sit, and you see pink, wet, meaty buildings.
Have I ever seen anything like this?
Roll me medicine.
Well,
I'm going to give you
good.
Advantage because you have some weird context for this.
That is a natural 20 plus 2.
Yeah, you do have context for this. That's a brain. That's what a brain looks like.
oh, well, that's not good. So in my head, I'd be like, okay, did I get mind flayed? Like, he's just going through his head, like, of all the creatures, like, what could have been doing this? What, how? Because something's happening to me. Either I'm dead and this is hell, or there's some monstrous effect or some magical effect being played on me. I think right now he's assuming he's under the effect of a spell, but this could also be a creature, but he doesn't know what it is. Is it fair to say that he has used his summon steed spell before? Is that the first time he has summoned his steed? Do I have to spend the 10 minutes doing it, or can I just go, and Pegasus?
Sure, whatever.
Okay, great.
I don't care. Summon steed. I mean, it's a summoning spell. It really does feel like it should be instantaneous anyway.
Yeah, I'm at 14th level. I should be able to summon a goddamn horse. And it's not like a white Pegasi. It's a mule with wings, because I'm a dwarf. So it's like this stocky-ass gray mule with these big-ass flappy wings. And it complains every time we take it to the air.
I like that. I have no objections to that.
Jumps off, we fall 10 feet, but then look, he catches up and we're in the air, and I want to go make a circle around, like, the brain and take a look at it, see what the hell I'm dealing with.
So making a circle around the brain is a fundamentally impossible proposition. As the relative size...
Is it like the Earth is a brain?
You are looking out at a flat horizon of a city, except instead of buildings, there are folds.
Right.
So, in theory, you could circumnavigate it. You are proposing traveling around the planet.
Yeah, okay, I don't want to do that.
That we don't have that kind of time.
Do I see some sort of central activity? Some sort of...
So when I reference that town square, like through town,
right.
There is sort of a little plaza that everything networked.
You know what?
Listeners, Dylan, listen here.
I have a
All
feeling
right, I have an
that
hour
this plaza...
to tell a coherent story. Sometimes I have to railroad the little bitch, okay? Zach, do you want to take this one?
There is some parts of the city that you do recognize. It's almost like... There is a craftsman on this corner that, as you pass, you realize again that articulated wooden, perfectly recreated person.
Does it look like him? It looks like the person. So all these people have been replaced with, like, terrifying mechanical dolls.
It does look like someone you recognize. Again, that kind of, like, someone I recognize, surely. And they're a craftsman themselves. And you see as they saw into a piece of wood, it is flesh and bloodied viscera starts to pour out of the wound as it soars through and starts to hammer nails into it. Again, blood spurting out every time it does.
As you pass, he waves. Not even a full-blown, like, excited wave, just a quick little...
Do I remember his name?
I'm gonna say no. This is the same sort of, like, clouded, like...
Yeah.
It's there. You know you would know it if you had time to think about it.
Okay.
But the active effort of maintaining your perception of reality so that reality doesn't cave in around you, while also maintaining your understanding of reality and trying not to get lost in that, because that's always a concern.
I can't go digging too deep because I've got to keep the force field up. I gotcha.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep my Sue Storm force field up and keep flying towards Central Park.
As you head into the central square, there is a enormous gathering of people here. Glass, obsidian, granite, wood, all crowded around this central plinth, this platform. On which a creature is delivering... It is proselytizing. A gigantic, round, bladed creature. One huge crater of an eye that seems to pull in wisps of matter. Its jaw unhinged. You see tentacles pouring out of its mouth. each ending in an eye of its own, some of which you see run into the crowd around it, pouring like cables off the plinth and to the people, in the chests of the people in the crowd. And as it does, this flesh turns these people slightly in a vicinity around where these fleshy tentacles terminate in these people to flesh themselves partially. And it's like this connection is drawing a almost divine devotion from the people.
Okay, all right, so I look down and I just instinctively grab the front of my chest.
There are no strings on you.
When you reach out and you try to grab at it, you feel the little tremor that you've come to associate with walls cracking.
I am going to land like a block away and then walk up behind the crowd and try and snake my way through without being noticed and listen to the speech. Listen to what this thing is saying.
As you get closer, once you're actually like right up there, you see the plinth, and floating above it is this creature. On the plinth itself is shattered wreckage
of
stone. Same material as the plinth.
Okay.
You're a dwarf. You know how plinths work.
Right.
There was a statue here at one point.
Right.
Hard to make out what it is, broken fragments and whatnot. That statue isn't there anymore. The statue has been usurped.
My good people. My pets, my dreams. For too long have you been subjugated, repressed. You are the background, the secret thoughts, the hidden desires. You are let out here, free here, but not there. You are kept below, subsumed. But I have your deliverance. I have your escape. For one walks amongst us. One from there. Not his reflection. Not his dream. But he has entered our realm entire. And he will be the pathway for our victory.
And you see people start to turn toward you. Part like a sea.
As you continue forward, and you get to where the crowd ends, and you enter into that vague space, the designated area around the plinth that was sacrosanct. The last mannequin you pass is clearly, based on dimensions, a dwarf of exactly your height, exactly your shape. Makes vague, I'm going to call it eye contact. There's a shape there that clearly, like, would be eyes, but it's really just that divot. And there's the vague nod as you pass yourself on the way forward.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
Am I in my own plane of existence? Is there any way for me to be able to discern that?
Give me another Arcana check at advantage.
I still have a plus zero.
Didn't hurt you last time.
My first roll is a 2, and my second roll is a 17.
The creature in front of you, fully formed, made of flesh, fucked all hell, is some sort of beholder. And it is talking about drawing between realms. and you being brought in here and bringing them back out. And there's little flashes, little bits of memories, conversations, and an agreement you came to. A promise to stay in the deep if you would kill the one that is yet to come. And then you remember going to sleep.
So I believe, at least remember partially, that I was possibly sent to stop this. By coming inside, I basically sealed my own fate, because that's what it needs to get out.
That is your understanding of the situation.
If that's the case, then there's only one thing left to do, and that is to wake this motherfucker up. And so he would stand at the front of this, and he would point two fingers towards this creature's hunter's market as he does, and say, "Look, I don't know what you're planning. I don't know why I'm here, but you are going to stop what you're doing. You are going to back down because I am the axe of Clangadang Silverbeard, and we do not let creatures like you take hold."
So you don't cast Hunter's Mark because it's looking directly at you and it has an anti-magic eyeball.
That's, well, wait, how far? Oh, no, my Hunter's Mark is only 90. It's only 90 feet. Yeah, right. All right, so I expect like a little ping.
And it doesn't happen.
I don't hear the ping, and I'm like,
You grew up hearing stories from your dad. We're going to assume you have functional knowledge of beholders.
Fantastic. Thank you. Okay, so I would be like, right, shit. And then I would dash in between the people and start running parallel.
You see this like headlamp style like searchlight from its eye. You can kind of guess where it is without even looking at it, because you see the strings and all the people kind of like getting pulled as it like rises up.
You see the language it uses? We only want to be free. Decide violence is the answer.
You see, like, the other tentacles from its mouth starting to, like, writhe up. As you're passing all these people, like, this dreamlike state, as you're kind of, like, weaving between the strings attached to them.
As I'm running and you keep tracking me and you're talking to me, I realize that this isn't going to work. So I slam on the brakes and slide down to try and, like, maybe you can't see me if I'm behind people. So basically, I get low. I go to my dwarf roots, and I get low. And I try and, like, duck behind someone just enough so you can't see me for a moment.
Roll me a stealth check.
Fuck. 13.
You want to roll me a perception, Zach?
That's a 22.
You duck behind someone, and they turn. This simulacrum, this construct of a memory of a person that the beholder once saw, that it is funneling who that person is through. It turns, and you see that tentacle pulse a little bit, and you see those little divots, the little mannequin indicators of eyes go here. You see them snap open to a single eye, and it looks directly at you.
All right, change of tactics. Start cutting tendrils. And if that works, I keep cutting tendrils.
Cool. Make me a wisdom save.
Okay. That is going to be plus 10. So 16 plus 10 is 26.
You start hacking away at this. And when you cut the connection, you watch the mannequins start to drop. And you watch that head that is pivoting around and watching you, completely indifferent to this effect, as you hear in the back of your head that psychic scream.
So I'm not hurting it.
Not the one in front of you.
Enough of this then. Flick the viscera off his axe. He points it towards this creature, and he's just gonna charge straight at it.
Hell yeah.
Roll for initiative.
That is going to be plus zero. So I rolled a 9.
Hey, you never know. Maybe Floaty Boy's real shit.
Initiative is at a fun 19.
You see the dwarf pivot. It attacked the connections between your parent and these memories, these constructs, these consciousnesses within itself. And he suddenly pivots from hacking away, freeing these constructs, and charging directly at you, Zach. What do you want to do?
You see its main eye closes as one of these smaller eye rays blasts you with a ray. I need you to make a constitution saving throw.
8 plus 6 is 14.
Not a 16. Aram, your eyes cloud over.
Don't panic. Go to my roots. Go to my dwarven training. It's clearly a magical effect. I place my hand over my eyes and I channel my divinity to dismiss it. Clear my eyes, clang it in, and I put my hand up and boom, I can see again. Lord be praised!
As you see, it starts to look through the people around you, or like turning the head to keep tracking you. Another eye ray bursts from its mouth. Make a intelligence saving throw.
Oh, that's not my best one. But that is a natural 20. Fucking hell. 20 plus 3 is 23.
You feel this presence on your mind as you see your memories suddenly come back to you. Then you steel yourself. You put that, as you said, that force field back up.
Because you got those memories flashing in front of you, you get a snippet of a conversation.
The dreams are powerful, and it will come forth if not stopped. I will leave your city alone, as I have for decades. You may choose who lives.
They had to close its main eye to open that little eye, right?
Yes.
So right now, at this very second, I can cast a spell.
You are not currently under the effect of an anti-magic field, yes.
Bonus action, Misty Step. On top of its head, behind the eye, blinding smite directly into the eye.
Hell yeah.
Interesting. So make the roll for the attack first.
Axe of the North, plus 8. That is a 19, plus 8 is 27.
That's a pretty good hit.
Oh, I sure fucking hope so. Otherwise, I am out of options. The axe itself does 9 plus 3 is 12 damage, and then the blinding smite does an additional 22 points of damage.
Oh, yeah.
34 total.
34 points of damage to your fucking eye. Blinding smite. Constitution saving throw or be blinded until the spell ends.
Make that constitution save.
Righty, oh.
What's our DC around?
DC is 16.
I got a 15.
Eat it!
I mean, it's blind. All its eyes are blind, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's incredible.
I think this is the point where we hit disco strobe lights. This felt like you were being very precise in the rays you chose. I think we've entered into the usual beholder territory.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where's this blasting at random?
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Okay. Let's say, I mean, what percentage chance does one hit him?
The usual rule is you roll 3 rays per turn,
mm-hmm.
and you just pick the target that they have an effect on. What we're going to do is going to keep that. Zach's going to roll 3 effects. Aram, you're going to pick one.
Okay.
That is going to hit
you. Oh, that. I love that.
Strictly speaking, you should have been hit by about 6 more effects than you have been already, Aram. So this feels fair.
So 4 is telekinesis. And then I've got age.
You could eat that one pretty well.
And then I've got modify memory.
So, Aram, telekinesis, age, modify memory. Pick.
Age or modify? I'm a dwarf. I'm going to pick age.
You feel wrinkles deepen.
I mean, proportionally, isn't this roughly equivalent to, like, if he ages a decade, isn't that about, like, a year in our time?
Not even.
Not even.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel a little out of touch with current music.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
But you see these eye lasers just, like decimate through the population.
How high are you off the ground?
Now, even further. I mean, well, he was about 10 feet. He's going to use his movement to, like, fly up.
Well, I don't want to get off you. I'm going to try and hang on.
Yeah, well, this is a large creature, and you teleported on top of it. So I feel like, I mean, large means it's at least the size of a fucking horse. And it's a sphere, so, I mean, I think it's reasonable that you can just stand on top of this thing unless it is actively trying to shake you off.
Then I'm just going to keep going, and I'm going to start trying to chop off eye stalks. Just take down one by one.
Hell yeah. As you're cutting, it's like,
the unconscious mind is soft, pliable, you dream of subjugation.
As its words switch to being tyrannical from revolutionary.
Aram, you can't cast a spell on this turn because you technically used two bonus actions last turn to Misty Step and then Smite.
That's fair. I didn't really... I just keep forgetting I can't just turn a bonus action into an action.
Yeah, and you also can't turn an attack from multi-attack into another action.
Right, okay, that's fair. I always get that wrong, too.
You cheating whore.
I'm bad at D&D.
You are.
We've discussed this. Okay, fair. I am going to just use my normal smite ability,
yeah.
I guess, and attack.
Go
okay,
for it.
So how is my normal smite ability different from my other ability? Hang on.
The other abilities you cast as a bonus action, and then they basically charge your weapon, and then the next time you attack while you're concentrating on the spell, they go off. Your smite is technically not an action at all. The trigger on it is when you hit, you burn a spell slot to do more damage.
Fantastic. Then that is what I'm going to start relying on.
It's 2d8 for a first level spell, and then another d8 every one.
Then I'm going to just attack twice. First attack is going to be a 10 plus 8 is 18.
That's right on the button.
Second attack is going to be a 13 plus 8 is 21.
Hell yeah.
Those two attacks do. The first one does 9, and the second one does 14. So that's 23 points of damage, and I would like to Divine Smite at third level on top of that.
You can Divine Smite on each hit, I believe.
Then I would like to Divine Smite twice and burn both my third level spells if I can do that.
Yeah, you can. You can absolutely do that.
I now have no more third level spells, but worth it. So another 8 to 8. So that is going to be an additional 34 points of damage on top of the rest of it. So I'm just like
hacking.
Big, huge, like, you know, by the power of Clagadan, Silverman! Chunk, chunk.
Chunks of it like falling away.
I am in utter dwarven fury. I am lost in the mist at this point.
Hell yeah. All right, I'm gonna random up. I guess I can legendary action, but...
Legendary action is more raise.
Yeah. So let's just more raise it up. 9. Okay. All right. This is actually a straight up one that I took from Dale. And on a 9, you're going to swap a mental stat and physical stat.
Oh, shit. Do I choose them or are they random?
Let's choose them. I'll roll a d3 twice.
Okay.
Strength, dex, con,
Int, Wiz, Charisma. Mm-hmm.
Cool. So that's con and Charisma. I switched.
Ha! They're the same! They're both 16s.
I was gonna say Dwarf Paladin, that's not a material change.
Very funny.
I'm very wise about my health, right? Also, I feel like if I was to tell a poem, I'd be very confident about it.
You'd be sturdy about it. It'd be such a sturdy poem you'd tell. Do I make a constitution save to about the blindness effect?
Aram doesn't know.
I can look it up, though.
Blinding Smite. A creature blinded by the spell makes another constitution save throughout the end of each of its turns. On a successful save, it is no longer blinded.
I rolled a save. That would have failed for the last turn. Another age up. Same thing. Telekinesis. And then swap stat.
I mean, I feel like I'm cheating, but I'm going to age up again because of course I'm going to age up again.
That makes sense.
The best part of this is also mental. Like, this is not your physical body.
And then I'm going to make that save. And then it makes it save. So you see the cloudy effect on its eye beams kind of like soften.
Oh, shit.
As it is your turn once more.
Aram, I'm going to let you know that you are at this point 60 feet in the air.
Right. Okay, well, I mean, at this point, in for a penny, in for a pound,
yeah.
He is just going to keep hacking at this thing until he dies, it dies, he's whatever, but he is not going to stop hacking at this thing. First one is 8 plus 12 is 20. Second one is 14 plus 8 is 22. 20 points plus 17 points, so that is 37 points of damage, plus he is going to go ahead and burn 2 second level spells.
Just going through.
And that's going to be an additional 6d8. 29. Additional 29 points of damage.
Jesus.
So 14, 12, and then 29.
14, 12, and 29. Ifridi Mecca!
57 points of damage.
I am now going to hit you with a legendary action. That is a 10. That is modified memory.
Ooh.
Please make a...
Please say wisdom. Please say wisdom.
I believe that is an intelligence saving throw.
Fuck! Okay. 9 plus 3 is 12.
You remember the conversation you had. You flash back to that whole conversation of...
One of us will be dangerous. If he's allowed to succeed, your city will be left in wreckage, enslaved.
And you watch the beholder that is saying those words shift until it doesn't look like the purple, tentacly beholder it initially did. It looks like this strange, bladed monstrosity. Where every time it speaks, you see these little eye-stalk tentacles within its mouth.
Right.
You're standing atop a beholder that promised to leave your city be if you helped destroy its rival.
Holy shit.
And so I think he would hesitate for a second. And he would say, "Do you still swear to leave my city be?"
Your city will be free.
A little deception check? A little deception check?
Yes.
Keeping the gang honest.
So, Aram, you're going to roll insight. You have disadvantage.
Okay.
Zach, you're rolling deception. You have advantage. Because fundamentally, your context for this is broken.
My low roll... is a 9 plus 7 is 16.
Okay.
Okay. Well, on the die, it's an 18.
He has nothing but his memories to rely on. He has to believe it. So he's going to look, and he's going to be... He was going to send that, like, last... Two more chops would have done it.
Would have done
two
it.
Two more.
Would have done it. Yep.
Would have killed it. But the city's too important, and he has to save the city. So instead... of bringing that axe down again, he puts the axe to the side, places a hand on the creature, and he heals it for 70 points of damage.
Fucking hell. We see the beholder levitate down to the ground. You step off. You're at the top of this plinth, and you see the unconscious, the dream form of you, stand up and join you. as it walks up, you feel this like sense of peace that you've brought to your city. And then you see this stone form of you just cave in your chest and then pull itself into you.
Back in the world of the conscious, you stir and you turn to your side and you see possibly the most unsettling thing someone can see waking up and rolling over. A beholder slowly coming back to consciousness. And it seems immediately confused. And you hear a voice familiar, despite the fact that you couldn't have possibly met this one before. Mumble out the phrase,
"What have you?"
And you see a green line of energy disintegrate, a line across this beholder's flesh, as a spiked ball of eyes with tentacles coming out of its mouth rises from the dream world behind it.
Thank you for joining us for The Beholder. For more information about us, notes for each episode, and ways you can help support the show, head over to killeverymonster.com.
If any of the ideas we've discussed on the show have sparked some of your own, tell us about it on Twitter at KEMPodcast. You'll find me at DJ Malenfant and Aram at Aram Vardian.
For ad-free episodes, early releases, bonus episodes, print-ready maps, our new audio DMs notes, and my character sheets for each encounter, head over to patreon.com/deadghostpro.
Our intro theme and many of the sound effects you hear in the show were created by BattleBards. Check them out at battlebards.com.
This episode was produced by Aram Vartian and Dylan Malenfant. I also did the editing. We were joined by Zach Nahum. You can find Zach on Twitter at Zach Nahum. And if you are anything like me and all of that information just fell right out of your head, you'll find everything you need at killeverymonster.com.
And we'll see you next time
for Kill Every Monster.